final prayer out of these series of prayers, where the living entity within the womb wants out in Krishna consciousness. Text 21 from chapter 31, canto 3. Translation, therefore, without being agitated any more, I shall deliver myself from the darkness of nescience with the help of my friend, clear consciousness. Simply by keeping the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu in my mind, I shall be saved from entering into the wombs of many mothers for repeated birth and death. Purport of Srila Prabhupada. The miseries of material existence begin from the very day when the spirit soul takes shelter in the ovum and sperm of the mother and father. They continue after he is born from the womb, and then they are further prolonged. We do not know where the suffering ends. It does not end, however, by one's changing his body. The change of body is taking place at any moment, but that does not mean that we are improving from the fetal condition of life to a more comfortable condition. The best thing is, therefore, to develop Krishna consciousness. Here it is stated, upasadita Vishnu padaha. This means realization of Krishna consciousness. One who is intelligent by the grace of the Lord and develops Krishna consciousness is successful in his life, because simply by keeping himself in Krishna consciousness, he will be saved from the repetition of birth and death. Paragraph. The child prays that it is better to remain within the womb of darkness and be constantly absorbed in Krishna consciousness than to get out and again fall a victim to the illusory energy. The illusory energy acts within the abdomen as well as outside the abdomen, but the trick is that one should remain Krishna conscious. And then the effect of such a horrible condition cannot act unfavorably upon him. In Bhagavad Gita, it is said that one's intelligence is his friend. And the same intelligence can also be his enemy. That's the mind. Here, also, the same idea is repeated. Sudhata naiva. Friendly intelligence. Absorption of intelligence in the personal service of Krishna and full consciousness of Krishna always are the path of self-realization and liberation. Without being unnecessarily agitated, if we take to the process of Krishna consciousness by constantly chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, the cycle of birth and death can be stopped for good. Final paragraph. It may be questioned herein how the child can be fully Krishna conscious within the womb of the mother without any paraphernalia with which to execute Krishna consciousness. Answer. It is not necessary to arrange for paraphernalia to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The child wants to remain within the abdomen of its mother, at the same time wants to be free from the clutches of Maya. One does not need any material arrangement to cultivate Krishna consciousness. One can cultivate Krishna consciousness anywhere and everywhere, provided you can always think of Krishna. The Maha Mantra, here we go again. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, can be chanted even within the abdomen of one's mother. Did you hear your daughter chant Hare Krishna?
Oh, not in
the... It's while still within the womb. It's hard to get her to do even now. kitchen, while sleeping, while working, while imprisoned in the womb, and while outside. This Krishna consciousness cannot be checked in any circumstance. The conclusion of the child's prayer is, let me remain in this condition, although it is very miserable. It is better not to fall a victim to Maya again by going outside, unquote. Well, as Prabhupada says at the beginning of the previous, well, this purport, there's both the inside and the outside circumstance. The living entity is the previous description. The living entity is in such an uncomfortable condition. Let me out of here. At the same time, because they're Krishna conscious, that's better. Uncomfortable condition where you're Krishna conscious is better than a comfortable condition where you're not Krishna conscious. And the danger of becoming prey to Maya, victim of Maya, is significant. Being in Maya within the womb of the mother is quite likely also. So the cure is Krishna consciousness, as Prabhupada is pointing out. The language is interesting in how Prabhupada has translated this. Without being agitated anymore, therefore, I shall deliver myself from the darkness of nations with the help of my friend, Krishna consciousness. It sounds like we can deliver ourselves. We take the help of our friend, clear consciousness. So the language is interesting. It's not that we can do anything. We can't even fall into Maya on our own, but to speak of deliver ourselves on our own. It's the intention of the translation of language is not, I'll do it on my own. Rather, the volition, the will from our side is to remain in Krishna consciousness. Specifically, without being agitated by the help of intelligence. Now, the Sanskrit word Atmanaiva Surada Atmanaiva. Surad means friend. Surada means friendly. And Atmanaiva. So this is one of those Sanskrit words that, depending upon the use, it can mean different things. Atma can mean the body or the mind or the soul. Commonly it means the soul. But it can mean the other. In this case, it's the natural intelligence of the soul, Atmanaiva. Surada Atmanaiva. You're not taking help from the soul to deliver. The soul is making the statement, taking help from. So, based upon the usage of the word in context, Prabhupada is taking it to mean good intelligence. Something like Buddha Yoga. Very similar. And where does Buddha Yoga come from? Krishna gives it. The Dhammi Buddha Yoga. He's the source of everything. So he's the source of spiritual intelligence. And Krishna gives spiritual intelligence when he sees, according to 10.10 Bhagavad Gita, when he sees what is continuously engaged, continuously striving to be engaged in loving service. Krishna then gives spiritual intelligence how to come to him. So that's with the help of that spiritual intelligence given by Krishna, I can be delivered. It's actually Krishna's delivered, in other words. But one takes help from that which Krishna gives, spiritual intelligence. So spiritual intelligence is one's best friend. Because spiritual intelligence can then control the mind. If there isn't spiritual intelligence, the generic variety of material existence, there's the absence of spiritual intelligence, then the Vedic circumstance, or the proper circumstance of top down becomes bottoms up. Meaning, the senses dictate to the mind, the intelligence becomes subservient to the mind, and the soul gets carried along for the ride. Rather than the soul indicates, I want to be with Krishna, Krishna gives spiritual intelligence directs the mind, the mind directs the senses. That's the proper word described in Bhagavad Gita. So again, in the absence of spiritual intelligence, then it's the other way around. The senses rule. The senses demand. I want. Registry goes to the mind. The switchboard operator says, yes, yes, what is it? I want. Okay. I'll call material intelligence to come and help make the arrangement. The material intelligence becomes subservient to the mind, which is subservient to the senses. Due to a lack of spiritual intelligence. It's a very embarrassing situation. Very unfortunate situation. So back to the language. I will deliver myself. I shall deliver myself. So the prior word is Atmanam Ashu Tamasa Suradatmanaya. The soul, Tamasa, will deliver myself from darkness, Ashu, very quickly, by the help of my friend. Prabhupada is translated as clear consciousness in the verse, and good intelligence or spiritual intelligence in the purport. They're not so different. Buddhi, spiritual intelligence, exists in a state of clear consciousness, or it carries us to the state of clear consciousness if we follow it. Krishna gives indication and we follow it. So then it's clear consciousness time. And that's our best friend. And that way also the mind can be the best friend. Because Prabhupada is in Bhagavad Gita it is said that one's intelligence is his friend, and the same intelligence can also be his enemy. Well, the verse says the mind can be your best friend or your greatest enemy. Which is true. And the intelligence can be your best friend or greatest enemy, which is also true. But same point as before, without spiritual intelligence, then intelligence is your greatest enemy. And the mind similarly is your greatest enemy. And then meaning we identify with our material intelligence and the material mind. So the material mind says whatever it says. I'm happy or I'm sad. I like or I don't like. It's the function of the mind is accepting, rejecting. It's binary. It's like a computer. Computers are patterned after the mind. It replicates activities. That's what artificial intelligence is. Computers just replicating the mind. there has to be an operator at the computer. There has to be a soul within the body, but the body, gross and subtle, is just a machine made of material energy. A binary processor machine is the mind. Liking, not liking. And if one is on the platform minus spiritual intelligence, then liking, not liking is just dictated by the modes of nature and one's past karma. Somebody likes this, another person doesn't like the same thing. One man's food is another man's poison, probably would say. It's just, you know, mind, which is the modes of nature and karma. Common example he would give is hog. A hog delights in eating stool. And we don't see that so much in the West, but in India we see it. They have a big smile when they find a big pile of stool. They spend a whole day looking for stool. And for a human or other species, yuck. But because of the karma and guna, nice. And you know, the filthy place is nice. For a person in the mode of goodness, it's awful. You know, without detailing how pigs live. That's the mind, the binary processor. And then a set of senses to match, you know, the attractions, repulsions of the mind. This material nature is very intelligently set up to keep the living entity captured. So, with good intelligence, it comes down to how much we want to be with Krishna. Attended a japa retreat in the month of March in Houston. And one of the co-presenters at the japa retreat was Radha Krishna Prabhu, very nice brahmachari, disciple of Tamal Krishna Maharaj from Fiji. Really nice devotee. Very sadhu-like devotee. He was one of the co-presenters. We had some discussion. He said something very simple, but it's still resonating. It really comes down to all of this, like japa retreats and getting it together and Krishna consciousness. It really comes down to how much we want to be with Krishna. Or he put it, how much we want to go back to God and how much we want to go back to Krishna. But how much we want to be in our relationship with Krishna really comes down to that. Whether we can follow or not follow. Whether we can get there or don't get there comes down to volition. So for those that have volition, Krishna gives spiritual intelligence. So the soul actually is the operative director. But once we press the reject Krishna button, then we're just being carried by the material energy. If we press the accept Krishna button, we're carried by the spiritual energy. And carried by the spiritual energy, one can easily cross beyond, as it's stated here, the cycle of birth and death. We can be in any circumstance and be happy if we're in our relationship with Krishna. Doesn't mean the circumstance is a lovely circumstance. We can be happy in any circumstance, serving Krishna in whatever the circumstance. So simple. So difficult because of our rebelliousness towards Krishna. That's all. The back to the context, it's, you know, in the womb or out of the womb. In the womb is difficult, as Prabhupada is laying it out. And out of the womb is difficult, and then where we're going next after that is also difficult. And there's no apparent end to it. Continues to cycle and cycle and birth and death cycle. Just going along for the ride, not liking it. So we need intelligence to get out. And that intelligence is something that Krishna supplies for those that want to be with him. As the concluding remark here, let me remain in this condition. Although it is very miserable, it is better not to fall victim to Maya again by going outside. So whatever the situation is, however troublesome, difficult, let the criterion be that we remain in Krishna consciousness. And whatever is conducive for Krishna consciousness, I'll accept that even if it's difficult. Because that will deliver me from the condition of material life. One last point, and that is another term that you use in the verse, the last phrase in Sanskrit, upasadita Vishnupada. So Vishnupada is easy. Lotus feet of Vishnu. Vishnupada. Then upasadita. Upasadita, the word for word is translated as place in my mind. Upasadita. Prabhupada refers to it as this means realization of Krishna consciousness. So there's a difference between in maturity, there's a difference between practicing and realization. We all know about that. Practice is something that we accept because we know it's good for us. We practice something because it's good for us. Or, you know, practice playing harmonium because you want to learn some melodies and sing for Krishna. So in the sadhana stage of practice, it's not necessarily, you know, awesome kirtan, but to the average person that hears, when someone's just learning and practicing, but for Krishna it's very nice because someone's trying to sing for him. As long as the consciousness is sing for him and not just become good at something so people can pat you on the back and say, oh, you're good at this. But you sing for Krishna, it's altogether different. And anything else in life, we learn as the bhakti principle, if we learn how to do what we do for Krishna, then we can get to the stage of realization. So, back to the word upasadita, Vishnupada. This is keeping the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu in my mind. Exactly as the word for word, it's in the verse. The purport speaks of realization. So keeping Lord Vishnu in the mind, less easier said than done. You can practice keeping Lord Vishnu in the mind, but something pushes it out, and that's our false ego. We get so absorbed in false ego, we're at the center, then the lotus feet of Vishnu or Krishna disappear. The mood of service disappears when we become absorbed in doership and false ego. We're very habituated to doership and false ego. That's our dearmost friend instead of spiritual intelligence. So there's that competition, struggle. And the solution to the struggle, Bhagavad Gita teaches us, is surrender to Krishna. So that's what the spirit soul is doing. The end of his prayers. He's praying to the personality of God, please give me this spiritual intelligence or clear consciousness situation. So, whether in the room or out of the room, I won't forget you. Everybody here, he forgets anyways. Doesn't have to. But depends on sustaining that purpose of wanting to be in a relationship with Krishna. Any discussion? Yes?
Can I get them perhaps by in the purport it says that by engaging a mind and always remembering Krishna, sometimes it gets pushed out because of the false ego. Will there be a stage in our Krishna consciousness where it's like natural?
Yes. Well, the potential is there. The potency is there in bhakti. And with the bhakti, so the potency of bhakti is earlier in Kapila's teachings to Devahuti. The answer is, it's possible. Because she asks, is it possible? Through the power of bhakti. Bhakti has that power. Dissolve false ego. We can't do it. Bhakti can do it. Power of bhakti. There's something that we need to do. Strive to be in our relationship with Krishna. And lovingly serve Him. Then the potency of bhakti will act more strongly.
Do you think, Guru Maharaj, this was an advanced soul that found itself in the womb and, you know, knew he had to take birth again? He knew all the processes already before he took birth.
How did he get such an education?
Because he was a devotee again before in his previous life. And so for some reason or other, he had to take birth again.
Right.
And he was praying to Krishna to help him in the next life. And he would rather stay in that womb than go outside.
Well, you render the Krishna process wherever he is.
Yeah.
So now your question is, where do you go
around? I think maybe it had to be an advanced soul.
Oh yes. Very, very exceptional.
Yeah.
When Parvati was here over the weekend, we were discussing very exceptional. Because he was under the impression that all souls go through that. No. Exceptional.
Fixing our mind up on Krishna means we always be in the present. But Krishna can also be in the past or in the future. So is that necessary to achieve being in the present moment all the time to achieve fixing our mind upon Krishna?
You're very specific with your questions. I can easily say something, but I'm not really sure what you're asking. Let me say two things and see if it hits what you're asking. The past is the past. The present is what is where we're operating. In the past, one may have been forgetful. To come to the stage where fixing one's mind on the lotus feet of Krishna or Vishnu within one's heart, what that means is, and how it's possible is, this is my understanding, two things, the mood of service and attachment to the object that is being served. Then the mind is fixed. Whatever the past may be, it's not dependent upon the past. It's in the present. But what may be Jagai and Madhai, you know, very fallen personalities, but they can come to the stage of mind fixed. So it's attachment to the object, like a mother's attached to the child, or a lover's attached to the beloved, or a friend is attached to a friend. Well, the miser is attached to his money. Notice that what you're attached to is where the mind goes.
So the
adjustment from the past is not just where we're going, but it's the moment. The moment is being with Krishna. Now there can be the feeling of anticipating being with Krishna. And that's the mind is with Krishna because he's the object of attachment. So the mind is with Krishna, even you may not be, so to speak, physically with Krishna, you're with Krishna. By the mind carries you to Krishna.
So this can only happen in the present.
Yeah. Well, and carrying on into the future. Moments of the present after the next moment of present after the next moment of present. Eternally. Are you thinking of some Buddhist concepts by any chance?
Also in Bhagavad Gita, it says a mode of goodness is to be in the present. So I don't know how important being in the present is in Krishna consciousness. Is that necessary to achieve being present in order to fixing our mind upon Krishna, or we just focus on devotional service and being the present will follow?
Well, they're not mutually exclusive. It's not either or. It's a false dichotomy. One can orient oneself either way. Either way you orient yourself, you end up in the same place. Being absorbed in devotional service means in the present moment. Being in the present moment means being engaged in devotional service. Yeah.
But sometimes we have done something wrong in the past. So we learn from past mistakes. So we are thinking about something happening in the past in order to do better in the present moment. And also we sometimes plan how to serve better, like in the future. So my mind is in the past or future, but it's possible to...
Even when doing that, I'll say it slowly, even when doing that, what you just described, you can be in the moment. That is, the moment is, being in the moment in this case means I'm Krishna's servant. And when I come before Krishna, I want Krishna to smile. That's the moment. Now I'm learning something from the past or making a plan of how to please Krishna even more in the future. I'm not. Planning isn't not being in the moment. And learning lessons isn't not being in the moment. Depends on where the center of your consciousness is. If in the positive way of saying, if your consciousness, that which right at the center is, I want to please Krishna, then I can contemplate things from the past or contemplate things in the future of service for Krishna done nicely and not in the moment, because the moment is pleasing Krishna. Right in Bhagavad Gita, one very nice purport in Bhagavad Gita Prabhupada says, similarly, one of the best ways to fix your mind on Krishna is to always contemplate, this is a planning statement, always contemplate how to spread the mercy of Krishna everywhere. Even if you don't do it, contemplate it like that, how to give the mercy of Krishna to others. Your mind is upon Krishna in a compassionate way, but depending upon Krishna with the good plan and how to carry out the plan. That's fixing the mind on Krishna. Now, back to your question, what about living in the moment? I would be interested. You show me the statement in Bhagavad Gita where it says the mode of goodness is symptomized by being in the moment. That's not language I'm used to hearing from Bhagavad Gita. It's language I'm used to hearing from Buddhism. During the during the Tathagata Sandarbha seminar, you'll hear Jiva Goswami addressing a Buddhist notion that says consciousness, the state of eternal consciousness, doesn't exist. All there is the moment. It's a Buddhist notion. And he addresses it. I can send you the section, but it's really based upon teaching from the Srimad Bhagavatam 11th canto. He addresses it. Apparently, there was a group of Buddhists during his time that were more prominent, now less prominent, and not even necessarily strict traditional Buddhism. Where does that exist today anyways? Who knows? But the notion of consciousness is not eternal. There's only the moment. That's Buddhism. It's just, be in the moment. Buddhism. Because that's all that exists. Because the next moment, the classic example is one moment I'm conscious of a blue object, and the next moment I'm conscious of a yellow object. So there's blue consciousness and yellow consciousness. There's only the moment. That's all there is, according to Buddhism. There isn't a soul that's conscious. It's just like obliterate the soul. You don't explicitly say the soul doesn't exist, just say, the presence of eternal consciousness is not an acceptable concept to Buddhists. There isn't eternity. There isn't the soul. All there is the moment. And then just reduce the moment down and down and down, it becomes nothing. That's the objective, the goal. With really serious Buddhists. And if you're not a really serious Buddhist, then you just try to be in the moment. And then you have, different people have their ideas of what that means. Therefore, we have different Buddhists. But the Bhagavatam conception is, it refers back to this Advaya Gyan verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Advaya Gyan. So I'm overdoing the explanation, but I think I'll send you the section. You can look it over, see if it touches on some of what you're asking. It's technical. The conclusion of it is the soul, if you're conscious to be self-realized, and God consciousness, they are simultaneous. There's no self-realization without God-realization. There's no God-realization without self-realization. They're simultaneous. At the rising of the sun, you can see yourself. So self-realization and God-realization. So Jiva Goswami is taking this position. We want to know about Krishna. We can understand some of the qualities of the self. And the quality of the self is there's eternal consciousness. And the Buddha says no. All there is the moment. And there's a series of moments, and that's what eternity is. There isn't anything else. Moments. And being conscious of the moment. So who is being conscious? What's this? When you realize that there's nothing. So he addresses that by Advaita Gyan, that the Bhagavatam asserts that all three, Vedanta Tattva, Vedas Tattva, Yajnagyanam, Advayam. Yajnagyanam, Advayam. Advayam, Gyanam, or Advayam. Non-dual consciousness. The soul is made of non-dual consciousness. So now back to your question. You're a soul, and if you're a Krishna conscious, you're in this non-dual conscious condition, you can look at the past. You can look to the future. You're not abandoning yourself and you know, lost in the past or lost in the future. You're in the position of serving Krishna each moment. That's the Krishna conscious answer, be in the moment. Be in the position of service unto Krishna. And then you can, wherever your attention goes, is in relation to your eternal service to Krishna. Learning from the past, planning the future, executing in the moment. That's your real position, eternal consciousness position. Moment to moment. Yes.
In your response to Yuri's question, at one point you mentioned a purport in the Bhagavad Gita where Prabhupada says that the best way, that one of the things you can to fix your mind on Krishna is by giving the mercy of Krishna to others.
By planning, how to.
Right.
Specifically planning.
Right. But how do you go about doing that if you feel so unqualified to even do it? I mean, and
Krishna will help. That's how you. A very nice example I like very much is Prahlad Maharaj offering prayers to Lord Srinidhi. Just in the beginning section, he's the demigod, the whole chapter, the demigods offering prayers and they fail. Lord Srinidhi is still angry. So they get huddled around Prahlad and say, well, he appeared because of you, so you can do it. You can pacify him. So they push him forward. Beautiful paintings of that. They're pushing him forward. He's standing before Lord Srinidhi saying, I'm not qualified. I can tell you my disqualifications. They're the ones that are qualified. They're my superiors, and because they're ordering me, I have to. But one good thing is I know you're very merciful. So whatever I offer, however paltry it is, you'll accept it. So on the order to do so, then you do so, even feeling unqualified to do so. Because that's where the strength comes from, the order. Not, you know, my list of good qualifications. And then qualifications come because of accepting the order. That's how it works. There's risks. I can think I'm the doer. I can get proud. I did something. And, oh, you know, there's a risk the other side. I'll do nothing. any way you look, there's risk. So you take the risk in the direction of carrying out an instruction to do so within your capacity. And then by doing so, your capacity increases. And that comes from Krishna. And then when a thoughtful individual will understand, it's not me, it's something that Krishna is permitting, Krishna's arrangement, Krishna's kindness, Krishna's potency. Otherwise it's not possible. So humility doesn't prevent one from doing service. Humility allows one to do service in Krishna consciousness, giving all credit if something is done nicely to Krishna. If something isn't done nicely, I take the responsibility. I'll put the blame on Krishna. Okay. Yeah.
I have another simple question. You said the thoughts like I'm happy, I'm sad, I like this, I don't like this.
That's the mind.
Yeah, that's the mind. How about the thought that I'm hungry, I'm tired?
That's the body.
I'm warm. Is this also material?
Yeah. Okay. The soul isn't warm or hungry or tired. No, the body, if you just change the language and say that this body is tired, I think I need some rest. I mean, we conventionally say I'm tired, I need to take some rest. I'm hungry, I need to get something to eat. Just conventional. But conventional language can easily lead us into, or keep us into, lock us into false ego, your bodily conception, or subtle conception. I'm happy, I'm sad. I'm angry, I'm forgiving. We can change our language, but even if we don't change our language, we should change our consciousness and make the distinction between the body, the mind, and the soul. We're using the body, using the mind in service. So in service, if the body is fatigued, then you give it some rest. So you can go on serving Krishna. You give it some fuel so it can keep running. Some prasadam. In service. Without identifying with it, just it's an instrument that I can use in Krishna service. As long as it's operating, and then when it breaks down, leave the body, go somewhere else, serve Krishna some other way.
I was just thinking, is the real symptom of love to feel separation from Krishna even if you're with Krishna?
Yes. Yes. Well, the gopis are like that at the tapo stage. Because even when they're with Krishna, they're anticipating if Krishna's going to be gone. While they're with Krishna, the separation feeling enters in the sense that soon we'll be separated. So it intensifies the love of being with Krishna, knowing that they're going to be separated. And that feeling that goes with that.
Well, that's not fear.
Huh?
That's not fear that... I mean, it's not... You can't classify that as fear.
Fear?
Yeah.
No, it could be fear, but it's love. You could say, or one could say, it's transcendental fear. The anticipation of meeting strengthens the experience of meeting. It's something like, when you take rest, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur, advocating when you take rest, before taking rest, three things. review the activities, what went well, what didn't go well, make a commitment to improve, and then anticipate, third, the opportunity to be with Krishna when I awaken. So that thought of being with Krishna when I awaken is with you when you wake. So the anticipation will help the sadhana that you do in the morning. So anticipation of meeting strengthens the meeting, being with Krishna. Right? Say it's here. I'm afraid that when, you know, at such and such o'clock I'm going to have to stop my job and go to work. Language. Attachment. Yeah. Wow.
I was thinking about I can't remember which verse it is. It's in chapter 11 of Bhagavad Gita.
Chapter 11 of Bhagavad Gita.
And it says that the only reality.
The only?
Reality. The only reality is the absolute truth. Right? So I was thinking about the answer. Are you working in uni?
Yes.
And I was thinking that, is it focusing on the absolute truth, being in the present moment then? Can we relate that to being in the present moment if that's the only reality?
You're stating the obvious. I'm not sure what you're asking.
My question is
the answer is yes. The answer is yes.
Okay.
And specific to her question, while I'm focused on the only reality, I may be contemplating, you know, in time, direction, this way, that way, but it's only in with reference to the absolute reality.
Okay.
So I'm not living in the past or planning the future. I mean, if you're living in the future, anticipate. I'm what I do today is going to help determine what's tomorrow. So it's just part of this absolute reality, using the reference that you're using from Bhagavad Gita. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you.